Kites. Anybody here ever built a kite? You can raise your arm. I don't think anybody will run y'all. Nobody's built a kite out here in West Texas and open the air like this. When I grew up, kites were a big thing, you know, and we would go to the Ben Franklin store and get a kite. I don't know, it seemed like a 10 cents. Maybe it was more than that. I don't know. Wasn't very much. And it was rolled up in a little ball or a little deal about size of that marker, about this long, and you unfolded it, and what you had, I don't know if everybody will be able to see this or not, but it'll help me a little bit, maybe. You'll see why I don't use this board very much, because I don't draw very well. But it was something like this when you got it all unfolded. And there would be little sticks that you stuck down through here, really lightweight, on each one, you know, and the paper would have a tunnel there that you could slide those in. And then I was raised from the time I was 9 years old on up till I was on my own by my grandparents. And my grandmother would tear up a sheet or something, and we would tie little strings of that sheet on here, and that was our tail. And there would be a stick across here like this and one across like that. And in the middle, we would tie a string, little old string that'd come down here to Buddy Jean, that's me, and then eventually I'd have to fly that thing. Anybody ever do that? None of y'all ever do it? Oh, I got some head nods. Okay, good deal. All right. Well, you know what? Raising a family is not too unlike building a kite. I don't know if anybody's ever thought about that, but I want you to think about that. When I would get kites like that, my grandmother would say, well, I remember when we had to get a newspaper, you know, and get these little sticks, we couldn't go buy a ready-made kite like that. Well, I'm sure that was true. But here's the deal. In building a kite, there was a process that you went through. The wood here, the frame that made up the wood that made up the frame, couldn't be heavy. It had to be real lightweight. It had to be put in just the right way. It had to be about the right size. It had to be formed in the right way. It had to have a string tied in the right place at the right weight. And it had to have the tail on it here for it to be able to successfully fly. When we have our children, and those of you that are children are still at home, you're a part of this kite-making process. You're the kite. Because as parents, we go through a process of trying to help develop you in such a way that one day you'll be out there on your own or getting close to being on your own, and you'll be flying solo, basically. Well, as parents, we get to the point, we can build you, we can help develop you, we can do all the things that are necessary to get you to a certain place in life, but once you're there, then we have a challenge. I'm trying to look around in the audience and see if we have some teenagers. I don't see a lot of teenagers, some. And this presents some problems sometimes for young adults, older teenagers. They're getting close to a time when they want to go out on their own and they want to develop their own lives. They want to make their own choices. They want to make their own decisions. And sometimes parents are kind of pulling on them. And they're kind of hanging on them, kind of like we do with flying a kite. And if you've ever flown a kite, once you get it up in the air and it's flying, you're going to have to make the decision to whether to let that string out or to pull it back and to hold it tight. Sometimes there'll be an up current of wind. By the way, I felt a lot of those cross currents coming over here pulling my trailer. But you'll have an up current. And that kite will want to take off, and you're faced with a difficult decision immediately. Do I let this string out? If I let it out too far, I've seen what happened to other kite flyers. That wind can catch it, that current can catch it, and it'll be gone. And I may never see it again, and if I do, it'll be a wreck. And so you're faced with a decision. Do I hang on tight to the kite, or do I let out more string? And so you have to make these choices. If you're a teenager or about to be, and your parents are putting some restrictions on you maybe that you're not comfortable with, and you feel like that you can should be able to avoid, that you're beyond that, I want you to understand, right? They're hanging on because they've seen other kites crash and fall to the ground. And they don't want to see that for you. They want you to have success, and they want you to fly high, and they want you to be everything they prayed that you would be, and that they've tried to help make you turn out that way. Now, it's true that sometimes we have parents that don't put out very much effort. Now, I'm going to take a chance and say that's not the case in our situation here. That we have people here that are concerned, and they care about their children, and they care about their well-being. Let's get rid of this. Okay, so we got rid of we're through with the kites. By the way, I'll do anything I can to help make this a successful meeting. If you'd like to visit with Margaret, she knows all about families, or me, either one. I may have to ask somebody what my phone number is. We don't remember another. Anyway, you probably can't read that, but if you have a need to visit with us, that's my phone number, okay? And I live right over here, right outside the door. All right, got that out of the way, and let's see if we can make this work. Godly parents, that's what I want to talk to you a little bit about this morning. Godly parents, and that's what we have a desire to be. We want to be everything that God has provided for us. I'm going to probably talk too much. Some of you will say he's talked too much about his own family. Well, I can't help it. It comes out. I was in the South China Sea somewhere when I got a radiogram about the birth of our first child. And I was so tickled, you know. And they called me up and they said, had this message, and I was reaching for it, and this petty officer said, "Wait a minute, I'll read it to you." So he reads it and he says, "Born July 7th. Weight 7 pounds, 1 ounce, mother and daughter doing fine." And he gave me the message. And that's whenever I found out I had our first child. And I did what everybody did back then, or in my circle anyway. I went down to the ship store. I bought a box of King Edward cigar, passed those out to everybody, and everybody was happy for me that knew me, and we were just tickle pink. I crawled in my bunk that night and started to go to bed. And I thought, man, what do I do now? I'd seen my dad mess up really royal in raising me, my mother too. I did not want to do that. I did not want to see that happen. So I was concerned about that. Margaret and I both understood that our children were gifts from God, and that's something we need to understand. In Genesis chapter 33, 4 and 5, as we begin, "And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck." Let's just stop a minute and remember the story. Jacob and Esau. Esau, they're twins. Esau was actually born just a tad early, or first. And then Jacob, but you remember the manipulation probably. You remember how Jacob's mother, you know, worked it around where he got the blessing from his father. Of course, Esau hated Jacob because of that. Jacob goes one way, Esau goes another, and they're separated for years. Jacob's story is very interesting. He develops a family, meets the girl that he wants, but it was a while before he got her. He ends up with four wives, basically, or two wives and two, anyway. So he's got all these children, he's got these wives, and he's coming back. And he knows he's going to meet Esau, and he's afraid. Just read the whole chapter, or the chapter before. He's concerned about that. And here comes Esau with 400 men, and he's about to meet him. So Esau ran to meet him. Now understand, Jacob's scared to death because he thought Esau, and rightfully so, I guess, Esau had a right to retaliate, if you look at it that way. He thought that's what was going to happen. So Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And they wept, and they wept, and he lifted up his eyes, and he saw the women, the children, and said, "Who are these?" And he said, "The children," this is Jacob speaking now, "the children which God has graciously given to thy servant." He understood that the children that he had were gifts from God. And that's what we need to understand, and that's what I want to establish here. Lo, children, the psalmist says, children are an heritage of the Lord. That means we inherit them from him. He makes that possible. And the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hands of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. A young man down in South Texas, you know, and he's married, and I can't recall his name right now, but that's all right. I know him well, and he come from a very large family, and a lot of brothers and sisters, and he married, and he had 5 kids just like that, real quick. Now, I asked him one time, we were down there in a meeting and several years ago, and I asked him, I said, "Is your quiver full?" And he said, "Not yet." He wanted more. He loved those children. He's done a wonderful job raising his children. I love this analogy here. I want you to think about the analogy between of what he's saying here. Children are a heritage of the Lord, and we need, as the guardians of those children, to do everything that we possibly can. I don't know if you've got any bow hunters here. I used to try to do that, and it didn't work very well for me. But a bow hunter, you know, that the quiver is where you put your arrows, what I understand. And the arrow itself is really important. The arrow is kind of like a child in this particular illustration here. You know, an arrow needs to be straight in order for it to be released. It's kind of like my kite story, you know, but this is a biblical one and probably more appropriate. It has those little feather-looking things on the end there where you pull it back. They tell me that's called a fletching. Is that right, anybody? Fletching? Okay. And you pull those. But someday you got to have to turn that thing loose. And in order for it to fly straight and hit its mark, that arrow has to be straight. It has to be pulled back and aimed properly. And the fletching has to be just right in order for it. So there's a lot of preparation in doing that. Happy is the man that hath his... Has his man had this quiver full of them. As such, God has a right, wouldn't you expect, since it's something that he's provided for us and he's given to us, he has a right to give the instructions on how we ought to raise him. So if we want to really know what God wants, don't listen to my kind story or any of my old Navy stories or my growing up stories. Listen to what the Word of God says about how, as parents, we are to raise our children. Except the Lord build a house, they labor that build it. Now, that particular statement can be applied to a lot of different areas. It can apply to the church, it can apply to our home, as we'll see this week, and it can certainly apply to our effort in raising our children. So God expects us, as parents, to teach our children. And first, parents, in order to do it properly, they themselves must love the Lord. Now, let's go back to the book of Deuteronomy. Understand the setting for the book of Deuteronomy here in the Old Testament. I need to bring my Bible up here. We're in trouble if this PowerPoint goes down. Oh, thank you, David. I hope I didn't waste any of your getting up and getting downs. We only have so many of those in life, you know. Thank you. Deuteronomy, you remember that Moses had led the children of Israel through the wilderness because of a mistake that Moses made. He wasn't going into the promised land. God took him up and allowed him to see it, but he didn't go in to occupy the land. So he's warning the children of Israel. He's giving them the last instructions, basically. And I'm told the word Deuteronomy means repeat or second. So this is kind of a repetition or a repeating of the law that had already been given. You can read in Leviticus and Numbers and so forth. But Deuteronomy is Moses' second chance, I guess you could say, to speak to the children of Israel so that they could have success, so they could build the nation that God had promised that they could have. Okay, and the land that he could promise that they could have. So he starts out, basically, and this is what he says. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our Lord, God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. Now that's the first step. If we want to be a good parent, I'm laying in that bunk. That's the instruction I needed to have. That's the effort that Margaret and I have tried to put in place in raising our children. Haven't always been what we needed to have been, probably, but we've done the best we can at doing that. So, but you got to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. How do you do that? I mean, how does that, is it evident? Well, the fact that you're here, or the fact that we come to worship God, the fact that we open our Bibles, the fact that we know where Deuteronomy is a pretty good indication that we have an understanding of God and His instruction to us. So, you know, we're on the right track. All right. He continues on. Verse 6, and these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. Okay, you take my word. You love me with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And you take these words that I'm going to speak to you, and you put them in your heart. As a parent, you let that be the motivating factor for you. He continues on, verse 7, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. Now you're going to see from the context of this chapter, I mean of this verse, what the word diligently means. I'm told that in the Hebrew, the word or diligently comes from a Hebrew word which means to do as to whet. W-H-E-T. You know what whet is. You know when you sharpen a knife, you use a what? A whet rock. Whet rock. I hope I'm saying it right. Whet rock. Okay? When I was growing up, after I went to live with my grandparents, my granddaddy was just an old poor dirt farmer. And when he had some free time, he was sitting under a shade tree in our front yard doing one of two things. He was either singing a song, learning a new song from the church songbook, or he was taking his pocket knife and using it on his whet rock. And as a boy, I'd say, Granddaddy, when can I have a knife and a whet rock? And he got me this, or somebody did, a pocket knife. It's a Red Ryder pocket knife. And you young ones, if you don't know who Red Ryder is, well, just ask some of these old coots, and they'll tell you who Red Ryder was. The blade was about an inch, half inch, quarter, a sixteenth of an inch thick. But I'd take that, and I got me a little cheap whet rock. And I would hit it a couple times and try to shave the hair on my arms, and it wouldn't do it. But you know what? When my granddaddy had a need for his pocket knife, which was a cheap knife, but when he had a need for it, it was razor sharp. You know why? Because he did it over and over and over and over. That's what the Hebrew word means, to do repeatedly, over and over and over. So that's what he's telling them, okay? And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shall talk of these laws, basically is what he's saying, when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou rise up, and thou shalt be as frontlets, they shall be a sign, excuse me, upon thine head, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the post of thine house and on thy gates. That's what he tells the children of Israel to do as parents. That's what you do with your children. That's what you take this law and you put it in your heart. And when you put it in your heart, then you take it and teach it to your children. And you do it diligently. You use it in every aspect of your life. You're out building fence or you're working cattle or whatever. If there's a situation that arises, you use this word that I'm giving you, these commandments, these teachings. I saw my granddaddy do some strange things. There was a situation that happened one time. I thought my granddaddy ought to just really tell them what for. And I asked him that. I said, why in the world did you let Aunt Beattie treat you like that and humiliate you that way? He said, well, because she really doesn't know any better. And I know what my role is as a Christian in dealing with her. And I'll treasure that that example that I saw and that I learned. He didn't open the Bible. He didn't open the Bible and turn to a scripture and read, well, here, son, here's what it says right here. That would have been okay. But he implemented that principle from that word in the decision that he made that I saw as a child as I grew up. Are our children seeing that? Are our grandchildren seeing that? And young person, if you happen to have a situation or be in a situation where you're not seeing that, look around at some of the others that you can admire and you respect and use their example and their influence as well. I don't get through this. It's all right to stop and pick it up later or some other time, right? Okay. God expects parents to teach their children that they must, that parents must nurture and admonish their children. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The other day I was so proud of my son and daughter-in-law. We have our two youngest grandchildren. We have the oldest is 29. Our youngest is eight, about to turn. We'll turn nine next year, but eight and about 10. And it's baseball season, and Ryland's catcher on the baseball team, a catcher. They've got more than one, but he's a catcher. And does a pretty good job, and plays, just almost every night. Last week, they had a tournament, Saturday and Sunday. Ryland didn't go to the tournament on Sunday. You know where he was at? He was sitting between me and Grandma at church. Right across the aisle was his mother and daddy and his sister. But he was there at church. We had dinner activity that day, and he was there for that. They won that tournament, and every player got a trophy and a ring except Ryland. I hope he knows how proud I am of him and his daddy and his mother for making that kind of decision. And those are not easy decisions. If they had made the decision the other way, I wouldn't have thought less of them. I understand the challenges that parents go through sometimes in balancing that issue. But that's the deal. What's most important to our children? Ryland growing up to be another... I'm trying my best to think of a great catcher in baseball. Johnny Bench. He's an Okie. Not too far from here, Binger, Oklahoma. But more importantly, if he grows up to be a good Christian man, that's what I'm interested in. It's what his daddy's interested in. See? And that's what we need to be interested in as parents and grandparents, all of those that have the opportunity to influence our children. God expects parents to teach our children to honor and show respect. Teach them to have good manners. By the way, if it's not being taught to you, sometimes those two little grandkids I have, they've got a bad habit of interrupting. I wish their mother and dad would kind of teach them a little more about interrupting. So Grandma and I do. We try not to interfere, but we try to. And wait a minute, she was talking. Let her finish what she was saying, you know. But Proverbs 16, verse 24, pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. Chapter 25, verse 11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold, pitchers of silver. The passages I have here at the bottom, Romans 13, 14, 1 Timothy chapter 2, 1 through 4, both of those passages are speaking about our attitude that we should have towards those in authority in our life in this country. We may not always agree with the leaders of our land, our president, governor, whatever it might be. But we have a responsibility, first to God, to show respect to them. As Paul says in Romans chapter 13, they look out for our soul. We are to pray for them, as Paul spoke to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 2, to pray for them and all that's in authority over our life. Hebrews chapter 13, verses 17 through 18. I ought to know those. Hebrews chapter 13. What does that passage speak of? It speaks to you as people of a congregation, all of us as members of a congregation, to show respect to the elders of the congregation. Now, I'm really going to get in trouble here. You always agree with everything the elders decide? Probably not. You'll be a very unique group if you do. But your responsibility is to respect them and understand that they're watching out for your soul, and God's going to hold them accountable for that. And it's a tough job sometimes. It's not easy, and they're not always going to make the kind of decision that everybody's pleased with. But we need to teach our children as they grow up to honor these people, to honor those that are older, those that have gray hair, those that have lived their life, those that you call grandma or meemaw or whatever you call them. We need to teach our children to show the kind of respect and gratitude that they need to have. Grandma walks in the room and our two little grandchildren are there. Sometimes I have to say, Grandma's here. And Reagan looks and, oh, and she'll jump out of the chair that she's in, which is Grandma's favorite recliner. Margaret messed up her shoulder, fell and really messed it up bad and had to have surgery. So we had to go buy another recliner, one that had push buttons so that she couldn't grab the lever with that right arm. Why is it always our right arm? I asked the guy at the furniture store, do they ever make a recliner with a control on the left-hand side? He said, no, but they should. Now, you're right. So we paid a little extra and got the push button kind. See, you understand what I'm saying? That's our responsibility as parents. Teach them to show respect, to show honor. Find those passages from the Word of God that speak to the kind of things that we're talking about here this morning. God expects parents to be a good example. The just man walketh in his integrity. Fathers and mothers, you can't do better for your children than to be a good, godly person and a person of integrity and have that said about you. The just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. The just man walketh in his integrity, and his children are blessed after him. Margaret and I got married. We hear the phrase dirt poor. People don't know what that means. We didn't have any dirt to own to be poor. We didn't own a thing. Our parents didn't own anything. My granddaddy was a dirt farmer. I think back on this time whenever Margaret and I wanted to get married and we were both just flat broke. I was in the military, in the Navy, and we had some money to kind of get married, get started, and we wanted to borrow $300 and ended up borrowing $350 for a year. And we had it worked out in my budget that I could pay that back. So I knew I'd have to have a cosigner. So I asked Margaret's daddy and my granddaddy if they would go to the bank and cosign for us. I think back on that, how silly that must have looked, because neither one of them owned enough to have $300 worth of collateral, you know. But you know what they did have? They had a good name. They were both well respected in the community. And that banker knew good and well, if Margaret Ann and Buddy Jean failed to meet the responsibilities that was given to them in paying this note back, that Lee Jones and Robert Stone would make sure it was paid. You know what? That's what having a good name is. And it provides that. You're the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5. Men don't light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick so that it gives light to all that are in the house. Let your light so shine among men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And that will pass on to your children as well. God expects us to discipline our children. I'm going to go through this real fast. Kids don't want to hear a lot of this, do you? Shake your head no. You don't hear all this now. I think you know that and you understand that, but I'll go there. Proverbs 17:25, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bear him. I want all you young people to understand that. It'll break their heart. It'll rip them apart if you're a foolish son, if you don't live the kind of life that they prepared you to live. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is found in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Knew a man back in Oklahoma that says Proverbs, every word in Proverbs means exactly what it says. Well, you know, let's play with that. You know, I was a child abuse prevention counselor for our county for 4 years. You know how many times we saw children that were beaten? And I know those programs sometimes go to extremes and they shouldn't. But you know how many times you see children that are beaten by parents that do not know how to parent, do not know how to be? And children die because they're beaten with the rod sometimes. Literal rod, I mean. What's the rod of correction here? Well, it's just exactly what it is. It's correction. It's correction. That's what it is. It's you correct the child. I have to keep looking at that clock so I don't get carried away here. And you know, you hear these stories about when you're a kid, and you don't know, do I remember that, or did I just hear the story so many times about it? But my granddaddy bought his first tractor. He didn't trust it to do what his team of horses, Smokey and Jack, could do all the time. So we kept Smokey and Jack in the pasture. But he's on the tractor down in the bottom field, working, plowing, doing something. And it is said that I got out and was playing under Smokey and Jack's feet. Now, I would grab hold of one of their back legs and swing on her tail and do different things, I was told. And this is before I was 9 years old. And I lived with him a lot off and on until my parents finally just threw me there and left me. But anyway, my granddad left the tractor and came. And my grandmother left the kitchen where she saw me and came. I can't remember which one got there first or how the story was told, which one got there first. But whoever it was jerked me up and paddled my behind. And I think it was my grandmother, and I think she picked up a switch on the way, and that's what she used. That was her rod of correction. My granddad got there, and he jerked me up, and he started paddling me. And my grandmother says, I've already spanked him for that. He said, I don't care. I told him if he got under those horses' hooves again, I was going to spank him. Now then, you think that helped me? What do you think? Withhold not correction from the child, and thou shalt beatest him with a rod, he shall not die. In other words, it's correct the child. Be strong with the discipline if you need to. You're not going to kill him. Of course you can, but you understand the concept here that's given. The rod of reproof give wisdom. Do you think there was some wisdom in a child crawling under 1,200 pound workhorses and trying to get them not to do that? You know what? My son and daughter-in-law race horses now, and they rope and barrel race and do all kinds of stuff. If he'll help me saddle it, I don't mind riding one, but you know what? I don't get around their feet anymore. I haven't ever done that again. That gave wisdom. You understand. Correct thy son, and it shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Find that proper method of being able to correct our children and raise them properly. And I want to go a little bit farther here. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, you notice I have a couple of words highlighted here. I don't know if you can tell it or not. The word, let me see here. That's it. The word child is, I would suggest, is singular. Train up a child in the way he or she should go, and when he or she is old, he will not depart from it. Now, I'll come back to this passage throughout the week, but singular. You know, you can't just, I know a family adopted a bunch of children. They tried to teach all those children exactly the same way. Well, you know, it's not going to work. You need to find out a little bit about the children, a little bit about their background. My oldest daughter texted me this morning, just the sweetest text as ever. She's 50-something, 4-something, I can't even remember. She was born in 68-something. She's the one I worried about early on, the first one. And she's just a jewel. She's retired. She was a school counselor, and she's just a jewel. And a wonderful mother and grandmother. She's just a doll. But you know what? I couldn't treat her sister Casey, who called me this morning. And those two girls, by the way, always have a running feud over which one they feel is to me, the favorite. So I'm going to text Tracy this afternoon, the oldest, who texts me, and let her know that Casey is my favorite because she called me personally to wish me happy father. And they'll both have a big kick out of that. But see, I couldn't teach Casey the same way I taught Tracy. And then lo and behold, here comes David. Not this David, my David. You know, he's 50, just turned 50. Well, gracious, he was totally different than both those girls. We have to find out what their way is. See, because they all are different, and children are different. I see some of you that are older nodding your head. You know that. You've raised children. You understand that one, what you do with one, you can't always do with the other. In the last part, and I may be making a play on words here. I don't know. Forgive me and allow me the opportunity. Proverbs 30 and 18, there be three things which are two, one, I forget this things here. Three things that are too wonderful for me. Yea, four, which I know not, the way of the eagle in the air, and the way of the serpent upon a rock, and the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a maid. Now, each one of these ways is different to the unique person or situation that we're talking about here. If it's a serpent, he's going to act different. If it's an eagle, he's going to act different. If it's Tracy, she's going to respond different. I couldn't discipline them the same way. I could stand Casey. This was our rod a lot of times when they were growing. I could stand. We don't have a corner here. Has this church got corners? Yeah. I could stand Casey stand in that corner till you learn to behave. Stand there. Bless your heart. One time we looked over and she had gone to sleep. And her shoulders were slumped up against it, and her knees were up against this like this. She just sound asleep, just snowing logs, just up against that deal. I don't know how far long she'd been there, probably about 10 minutes. I couldn't do Tracy that way. Why, gracious goodness in the world, that would have never worked. But I could try some things with Tracy that would work a lot better than that. You get the idea. Children, and I'll talk about this in detail this afternoon a little bit. God expects parents to bless and to be a blessing to their children. Verily I say unto you, Jesus speaking here, Mark chapter 10, verse 15, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein. And he took them up, the little children, in his arms, and he put his hands upon them, and he blessed them. We need to be a blessing to our children. I want to use a passage as we close here, as we think about it. In Numbers chapter 6 and verse 22, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron, Aaron was to be the priest, speak unto Aaron and unto his sons, saying, on this wise ye shall bless the children of Israel, saying unto them. These are the words that was to be used. The Lord bless you and keep you. Done a lot of weddings, and this is usually the way I end it. The Lord bless you, or bless thee, and keep thee. The Lord make his face to shine upon thee, and be gracious unto thee. And the Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. And they shall put my name upon the children of Israel, and I will bless them. And that's what we want. That's the lesson of the morning. You've been a wonderful audience. I don't like to speak long, and I know I get carried away at this subject sometimes. But remember this, children are a gift from God. As parents were to teach, parents are to teach their children. As parents, we are to teach our children. They're not to be left with themselves. And we're to be consistent in this teaching, not inconsistent, but consistent. Not one way one day and another the next. We're to nurture in the way of the Lord. They need to understand that what we teach them and why we're teaching them is coming from our Creator. We need to be a good example ourselves. When they look at us, it's going to make all the difference in what we share with them from the Word, in what they see in us. I teach my children about self-control, and they see me lose it. What have I done with that teaching? It's unraveled, isn't it? See? So it's important that we do that. We need to be a good example. We need to discipline our children properly. We need to treat them as individuals in that process, and we need to bless them and be a blessing to them.